How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
It's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Canby School District is investigating an apparent miscommunication that led to more than 100 members of the award-winning marching band missing their chance to participate in the popular Starlight Parade Saturday night because the school buses that were supposed to take them to Portland never showed up. Part of the Portland Rose Festival, the Starlight Parade draws an estimated 325,000 spectators each year, not to mention those watching the live broadcast at home. Canby's band was thrilled to get the invite and had spent hours working on a new piece, the March Creole, specifically for the event. As planned, they met at the Canby Fine Arts Center in uniform, bubbling with excitement, but their bus never showed. Instead, the band marched around the high school parking lot because band director Nick Luchterhand didn't want all their hard work and preparation to go to waste. They did a fantastic job. We have video in the story on our website. I encourage you to go check it out, as long as you're not, you know, driving or anything. They were cheered on by parents, those who hadn't already dropped their kids off and headed to Portland to actually watch the parade, and a handful of curious passersby who stopped to see what was going on. But for students who were expecting to perform for hundreds of thousands, it had to be a terrible letdown. "My son absolutely loves marching band," one parent told us. "He was so excited for us to do it one more time for the parade. So many class hours and practices, parents working to get uniforms fitted, and just genuine dedication goes into marching as a whole. They looked so fantastic. That's some proof of how hard they worked." When the buses failed to arrive on time Saturday, band teachers and parents began making calls, trying to reach Student Transportation of America, Canby's contracted bus provider, district administration and staff, anyone who might be able to help. There were at least 4 admins that were contacted and were working feverishly when they heard there was an issue, said another parent who asked to remain anonymous. Absolute kudos to them for halting whatever they were doing, getting on their phones, and trying to work some magic. Some parents even posted on Facebook and to the local group Canby Now, where they even found a few offers to shuttle parents up to the parade. But it just wasn't in the cards. Securing transportation for over 100 kids, not to mention band directors, parent chaperones, and some bulky instruments, is not something that can be easily arranged on the fly. In a press release Sunday morning, the district said that the early investigation indicates STA, quote, was not aware of the planned trip and did not receive a request to transport students to downtown Portland. "We understand how disappointed the entire CHS band community must be," the release said. "The district will continue to look into the circumstances around the lack of transportation to the parade and will provide an update on the findings of the investigation when it is complete." Though he deferred comment on the transportation issue to the district, Luchterhand did explain that the band had been accepted to participate in the Starlight Parade following an application process. Only a limited number of ensembles make the cut. "Canby has participated in the past, but not since Luchterhand has been with the district. I also am a CHS graduate. We participated in the Starlight Parade when I was a student," he said. "It was one of my favorites, and I wanted to pass that on to my students." But it does look like the band may have its chance to march on a grand stage anyway. The Portland Rose Festival announced Sunday afternoon that they had invited the Canby Marching Band to participate in Saturday's Grand Floral Parade. Luchterhand confirmed the invitation. "I'm on board," he said. "We'll discuss this in class tomorrow," that would be Monday, "and make sure students are on board."
Oregon schools will be required to teach students about the Holocaust and genocide following the passage of last week's new legislation that is now headed to the desk of Governor Kate Brown. Senate Bill 664 adds specific references to the Holocaust and genocide to recently updated social studies standards for high school students. The Oregon Department of Education will provide technical assistance to school districts in implementing the curriculum. In passing the new standards, the Oregon has joined 10 other states that require some level of Holocaust and genocide education in classrooms. The idea of the legislation was brought forward by Claire Saranowski, I hope I got that name right, a 14-year-old Lake Oswego student at the encouragement of Holocaust survivor Altair Wiener. Wiener died in a tragic accident last year, but not before the two met following one of his presentations at her school and became, in her words, unlikely friends.
Some would say that our friendship was somewhat unlikely due to a multitude of differences, including age, gender, religion, and living in different generations. However, from getting to know one another, the similarities we shared, greatly outweighed these differences. A commonality that we both possessed was a love for learning and education. Altair's dream was to mandate education which would continue the legacy of the Holocaust and genocides. Although he is not here with me today, he prepared me to carry on his mission and to persevere in making this a reality.
In testimony before a Senate committee hearing earlier this year, Claire said she was motivated to present the bill after seeing the impact Altair Wiener's story had on her and her classmates.
I witnessed firsthand the impact Altair's story had on my peers when my school was able to be part of one of the nearly 1,000 audiences Altair's story was able to spread to. Afterwards in my classes, I heard students describe how thankful they were for their family, education, and life. It definitely taught my peers and myself what it is like to not take the things that we see as necessities for granted.
She said the measure is needed to help prevent our world from losing its history and thereby running the risk of repeating mistakes we could have learned from, and also to remind future generations that genocide continues to be a sad reality in some parts of the world.
In schools today, prejudice is as prevalent as ever, since acts of racial, social, and religious injustices occur in our classrooms daily. These teachings can combat the stereotyping and ensure students are equipped to be an upstander rather than a bystander. When word spread about my involvement in Senate Bill 664, I received an overwhelming response from classmates, teachers, parents, and community members who felt this legislation is imperative to teach our students. As time inevitably moves forward and we get further away from when the Holocaust occurred, we are losing our history and not acknowledging the fact that genocide is still taking place around the world as we speak today. We need to ensure these atrocities are never forgotten nor ignored.
In a legislative session marked at times by sharp partisan disagreements, which even included a week-long walkout by Senate Republicans in an attempt to thwart passage of House Bill 3427, SB 664 seemed to have a universal support. It passed both chambers unanimously. The French Prairie Bridge Task Force will meet at 6 p.m. June 4th to consider additional bridge analysis and public input on design concepts for the proposed French Prairie Bike and Ped Bridge across the Willamette River. The task force is expected to recommend a preferred bridge design for the consideration by the Clackamas Board of County Commissioners and the Wilsonville City Council. If the project is realized, the bridge would provide a safe connection for hikers, cyclists, and emergency vehicles between the Wilsonville and Aurora, Donald, and Canby area. At the task force meeting, the project team will provide an overview of the preferred bridge design, location selection, and the bridge type refinement. Additional technical analysis of the cable stayed and suspension bridge types and the summary of the public feedback received through a recent online survey. Respondents were asked to pick one of two bridge designs, cable stayed and suspension bridge, which were selected for their low impact on waterways and their ability to serve as a memorable landmark. The online survey will feature additional bridge design information and photo realistic images of the two bridge types at the selected bridge location. Right now, the main option across the Willamette River is the frequently congested Boone's Ferry Bridge on I-5, which carries over 120,000 vehicles every day and provides cyclists and pedestrians with no separation from traffic due to substandard shoulder widths. The proposed bridge would provide a connection for the 1,000 miles of existing multi-use trails that stretch across three counties, including the 134-mile Willamette Valley Scenic Bike bikeway to Eugene. Traffic backups can also impact emergency response times, and the proposed French Prairie Bridge would provide an I-5 incident option for emergency responders. The French Prairie Bridge would be located adjacent to the existing bridge connecting Boone's Ferry Road in Wilsonville with Butteville Road in Aurora. The June 4th meeting will be held at Wilsonville City Hall, 29799 Southwest Town Center Loop East. All task force meetings are open to the public to see illustrations of the proposed bridge that supporters believe will give youth offenders a fair opportunity for redemption and rehabilitation. The measure, Senate Bill 1008, will also offer needed corrections to the law passed by voters in 1994 concerning issues that courts later found to be unconstitutional. SB 1008 has been approved by 2/3 majority in both chambers, most recently by the House last week. The vote was 40-18 and was signed by Senate President Peter Courtney on Wednesday. Those in favor argue that Measure 11, which automatically requires juvenile defendants 15 and older who are charged with certain serious crimes to be tried as adults, does more harm than good for many youth offenders, turning them into hardened criminals through a lifetime of incarceration rather than allowing them the option of a path towards reform and rehabilitation. The Senate Committee on Judiciary convened a work group of local stakeholders and national experts who examine case law, brain science, best practices, national trends, and relevant data to better understand the effects of Measure 11. The group also examined whether Measure 11 ensures justice for victims, protects the public, holds juvenile offenders accountable, and provides opportunities to reform and rehabilitate. Senate Bill 1008 is a product of that work group. In many cases, under the current law, youth who have served time in a juvenile detention facility rehabilitate rather quickly. Under the status quo, Measure 11 offenders convicted as juveniles spend the first part of their sentence in juvenile facilities and then can be transferred to adult prisons once they reach a certain age. That move often wipes out most of the progress that the juvenile has made towards rehabilitation and turns them into lifelong criminals. Representative Marty Wild, a Democrat from Eugene and former deputy district attorney, spoke on the floor about his experiences prosecuting juvenile cases and the need to better understand the circumstances that led children to commit crimes. It is vital, he said, to consider the other factors in sentencing children. For those in our system who can be redeemed, we should be focusing on the hope of the future, not the mistakes of the past, Representative Wild said. There is no justice in treating children as small adults and locking them away without a chance to rehabilitate. Senate Bill 1008 is a common sense approach that offers balance. Senator Jackie Winters, a Salem Republican who has been a long advocate of justice reform, succumbed last week to her battle with lung cancer. But prior to her death, she had released a statement saying that she was pleased to see the bill was making it across the finish line in her absence. I believe in working to ensure fairness in our system for all, she said. I believe that youth offenders deserve a second chance. I believe that all need hope and a chance for redemption. We need a public safety system that holds youth accountable for crimes, but just as importantly ensures that they can grow and change for the better. But not all Republicans were in favor of SB 1008 as written. A Republican-led amendment that would have referred the measure to voters failed. Representative Ron Noble from Minville made the motion, pointing out that Oregon voters approved ballot Measure 11 with 66% of the vote in November of 1994. An attempted repeal of the measure 6 years later was defeated by an even larger margin, and with nearly 3/4 of Oregonians opposed. We cannot continue to overturn the will of the voters, Republican Noble said. Oregon's juvenile justice system needs change, but the people need the opportunity to weigh in on this important reform that affects our youth and public safety. The voters deserve to be heard. The motion to refer the legislation to the people failed by a vote of 23-35.
The 2019 Canby Wine, Food, and Brew Fest was held this weekend at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. It featured dozens of area breweries, artisans, eateries, and some of the most award-winning and well-known vintners in the state of Oregon, including Merrill Cellars, Noble Estate, Stone Griffin Vineyard, Wandering Duck, Catman Cellars, Vitus Ridge, and Honeywood Winery. One of the most popular wineries throughout the weekend, though, was a draw at least as much for its eye-catching name as for its reputation for quality vintages. Well, it's a good thing we're not a video podcast, because we have the FCC after us, because we're here talking with Nick from Naked Winery. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir.
Tell us a little bit about Naked Winery.
Yeah, so we are a winery that's based out of Hood River, and so basically we've been around since 1999.
Right, founded by nudists.
Yes, founded by nudists.
Where does the name come
everyone
from?
Everyone was naked, stomping on grapes together. So basically it came from, there was a couple that moved up from California. They had retired, they had a little bit of money, and they just wanted to do something for fun. And so they kind of just started making wine as a fun hobby. And then they said, they started sharing with some friends, and friends like, hey, this is really good, you should name it. And so then they were just kind of a little wild, little out of the box kind of guys, and they said, oh, screw it, let's just do a Naked Winery. And we're gonna just name our, we're gonna have kind of sexual innuendos on some of our wines and things like that. It was the late 90s, early 2000s. Victoria's Secret was as prime, all this stuff. So that's kind of why that happened. And then basically it just kind of, they hit the ground rolling, man. They started with just one or two wines, and now we produce over 60 different wines.
The name was a good choice. Like, you're catching people's eyes.
100%. Right? 100%. And so it's great marketing, right? Great. You know, we have like our Cabernet is, a penetration Cabernet Sauvignon. So it's.
Justin Lovinger, the second generation and a family owned confectionery Portland Fudge Company, said they still make their 12 varieties of delicious treats the old fashioned way.
And we make everything the old fashioned way. We use the copper kettles, marble tables.
Oh, really?
All of it.
That's
so
neat.
It's very, very labor intensive.
Yeah. What's the process like?
Well, on average, it takes about an hour.
You have to turn it a bunch of times.
Yeah. So basically, we're whipping air into it to cool it down, and then we have to hand shape it all and turn it into like a loaf. And so we're mistaken a lot for bread.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very different.
Yes.
Yeah. I wish bread tasted like fudge.
Right?
I'd eat more grains if that were true.
Absolutely.
Four Spirits Distillery was also a big hit. Their line of handcrafted whiskeys, rums, gins, and vodkas spans more than four labels. The name of the company has a much deeper meaning behind it than the number of products they offer, as Katie Allard explains.
Yeah, so we're a veteran-owned distillery. It's a tribute to four men who couldn't return from the owner's unit in Iraq in 2004.
And who's the owner?
His name's Dawson. Dawson Officer.
Right.
Yeah, he started the company late 2010 when he started distilling, and now we've started in Adair Village, and we're in Corvallis now.
Jeff Garrett is the owner, founder, and cider maker at 12 Bridge Cider Works in Oregon City. He had a good reason for getting into making cider. He wasn't any good at making beer.
It's just been a hobby of mine for about 7 years that I started. I found my kids were getting older. I knew I'd have some free time, so I needed to come up with a hobby.
Yeah.
I made bad beer in the early 90s, so I just decided I wanted to try something different. So I just started, figured out, did my first cider batch, and it wasn't that great, but I kept going. And then over time, just more and more friends of mine wanted me to start making cider for them, and it got to a point where I was thinking, well, why not see if we can open a place? So I just kind of dug in and started doing research, and then here we are.
Don't worry. Jess says he's not offended that the name of the festival didn't include him. Did you ask them if they'll change it to Canby Wine Food Brew and Cider?
You know, I do always notice that. I feel like I need to get a little bit of legs under me before I start dictating what they might do.
All right, well, maybe next year. The festival wasn't just about eating and drinking. Now, don't get me wrong, it was primarily about eating and drinking, but there was other stuff going on too. Live music, axe throwing, because what could possibly fit better with alcohol than 10-pound axes being hurled through the air, and even art. Tammy Palmer and Deanna Bainey of Sisterscape Studios in Woodburn were on hand for the Wine and Paint Buzz Studio.
And we don't know if they came up with that because of the buzz of the wine or the buzz of the social aspect of it.
I think it might be the wine, but that's how I took it.
So we created some pictures, paintings that we do that we made just for this event. And then just have different schedules for people to come by and paint with us.
I think I would need a pretty good buzz to do painting and think that it's good, because I'm not very artistic myself. So
I think that's where the whole idea comes together. It's more of a social event.
For photos from the event, check us out on Instagram at CanBeNow. Gypsy Marshall, play us out.
See ya. Wasted away again at the CanBe Wine Festival. Woo! Searching for my lost shaker of salt. Where's the salt? Where's the gosh darn salt? Some people claim that there's a woman to blame.
but I know. Well, it could be my fault. Okay, some of the time, maybe.
Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest. And the FOB Taproom in Canby is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beer, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey, Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right. It's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB. Are you ready for some football? Well, you're going to have to wait because football season doesn't start for a few months. But our guest on the Canby Conversation today knows quite a bit about football. Mm-hmm. It's Jimmy Joyce. He's the current offensive coordinator, sort of Beaverton High
former
School.
Former offensive former, coordinator, I guess you'd say now.
Officially former. And officially the new head coach of Canby High School, replacing Coach Mike Vaughn. How are you, Coach Joyce?
I'm pretty good today. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks. You go Coach Joyce or Coach Jimmy?
Coach Joyce.
Okay.
Coach Joyce. Coach Jimmy sounds a little different.
A little too... good old boy.
Yeah, so Coach Joyce is good enough for me.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the show. Wanted to start by giving you a chance to just kind of tell folks a little bit about yourself and introduce yourself to the community.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm really excited about being in Canby. It's an unbelievable community.
You were with Beaverton for about 7 years.
I've been with Beaverton for 7 years. Yeah. I'm also a Beaverton grad, so this is, I've been around the Beaverton program for quite a few years.
And you just realize Cougars are so much cooler.
Yeah, Cougar can always beat a beaver in most fights, so it was a pretty easy.
What fight would a beaver win against?
You know, if they found each other in the stream one day, you know, we know the we just know that
aquatic,
you know,
fight. Okay, fair enough.
Unless it was like a building competition or something like that.
Yeah,
but
they'd have the edge.
It was just going to be one of those things. Canby is an opportunity though that I think you couldn't really pass up if you were out there. Looking at jobs, it was just one of those situations that I was really excited about. Sure. And
Been looking to get a head coaching gig?
I have been looking, but not to the point where it was like front and center.
Okay.
It was something that if the right opportunity was going to come around.
Sure.
And I remember about 5 or 6 years ago talking with my wife, and we were kind of listing programs that I'd be interested in, and one of those programs that had always come up was Canby.
Really? Why?
There's a lot of things about the Canby community that are very unique. Being a one horse town, coming from the Beaverton area, we're an umbrella district. We have 6 high schools underneath us here.
Right.
And we have a really big, the largest private school in the state of Oregon, a mile down the road. So that creates a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And also some advantages as well. I'm not saying that it's all bad, but it is.
It's different.
It's different. It's very hard to create a sense of community around an athletic program because there's just so many opportunities to move.
Sure. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
And Canby being a community that's already built into a single high school, it's something that I think any coach really looks at and goes, that's someplace that we'd like to be.
Sure.
And, it just, like I said, it was an opportunity that kind of presented itself a little late, for me, but I had to kind of wrap my head around it a little bit too, see if it was something I was really interested in. But sure. It was something that my wife and I both agreed that, you know, this is something we'd like to pursue.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Canby football program. This is our first year doing the podcast. We did cover the football season last year. Mm-hmm. It's pretty brutal.
I'm not going to lie, it was. Yeah.
It's been since 2014, actually, that Canby was in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of a down rut, but we haven't been kind of observing it. So I don't necessarily know kind of what's been going, quote unquote, wrong, or, you know, can you talk just a little bit, maybe for listeners that haven't been following, what the history has been with Canby football?
Well, I can tell you this, you know, even though it has been down since 2014, it has been a really slow, you know, transition, I think, to, or just, you know, what a lot of people are experiencing, not just Canby, and that's lower numbers, you know, kids not choosing to play football and stuff like that. And also the increase of programs in the area have really kind of skyrocketed as well. But it's not that long ago that Canby was one of the elite programs in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
And I remember taking a team down there in 2013. We were kind of an upstart. I ended up having a sophomore quarterback who's now the quarterback at the University of Colorado. He was a sophomore, and we ended up going into we had to play a playoff game at Canby. And, you know, we thought it was a favorable matchup for us, and it turned out to be a very unfavorable matchup for us. It was one of the hardest hitting games we have, and they ended up in the state semifinals that year.
So I was just looking at my past story because I thought I had it in here, which I don't. But yeah, you met Canby in the playoffs.
We've played Canby a lot. So the other interesting thing is I've had a familiarity with Canby, the Canby program, since I was playing here at Beaverton in 2000, or even from 1998 on.
Yeah, what was your position?
I was a center. Okay. Here, and then in college I moved to guard. And offensive, a little bit of center, offensive line. The one thing though, we, Beaverton and Canby, had always done summer camps together for almost 26 years. I think we've done summer camp together,
or just camp. Beaverton High School, or more than one high school in Beaverton
and Sunset, actually. For 1 year would also come, and we'd scrimmage each other each fall. This would be a situation that we got to know a lot of the coaches on staff. We always did them in Canby. Mm-hmm. And then for years, we ended up playing Canby.
Yeah.
My first 5 or 6 years as a coach, I think we played them 7 times. A few games in the playoffs. And so it was pretty familiar.
Getting sick of the Cougars by then.
We were. I mean, we almost did. I mean, it's kind of funny. I retained some of the coaches that were still on staff, and we played a lot of football against each other because of that. And it's been one of those things that it's been kind of interesting because we've kind of been able to relive like the past glories and the past failures for both of us.
Well, I know that there's been a lot of excitement around your hire. You know, you replaced a longtime coach, Mike Vaught. But I feel like a lot of the excitement, I mean, is just, well, some of the excitement is just in general, like, you kind of, it's was new. A feeling, it was something new, kind of was a feeling that we needed to change. Nothing, no disrespect to Coach Vaught and his long service to Canby High School. But part of it also is just like, you have just really dived in, you know, with both feet, even though you're still here as a teacher at Beaverton High School. But you've been doing a lot. You've been doing meet and greets and some of that stuff. Tell me why, and kind of what your approach was.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to do, because I'm an outsider.
Yeah.
I was an outsider coming into a brand new community.
Right.
It would be very different if, I think, the role is reversed. I was coming from Canby to Beaverton. It'd be different because, but Canby's a very close-knit community. It's something that I was very shocked at to learn how, you know, everything's tied together.
Right.
So one of my things was after the day I accepted the job, and we kind of laid out a plan to announce me, was it was kind of like, we have to get out there, and we have to get out front, and we have to start endearing ourselves to the community again, because we have been down. We know the records in the past. That pushes people away. It doesn't, even if they don't want to admit it, it pushes people away. And we wanted to start building those bridges back into our community again, and I wanted to become a member of the community, and I felt like that was something that the only way I could do it right now was through different medias, going out there and making myself visible within the community. Because while I knew some of the coaches on staff, obviously I got to know the admin and some of the teachers through the interview process. I didn't know any of the kids. And, you know, I didn't really know any of the people that lived in the community. And it's been very interesting to me just going out there and, you know, putting myself out there and seeing what comes back. And it's been amazing what's come back.
I was going to say, well, tell me about that, because it seems very positive. It seems like people have just, I mean, so far, like, we'll see when the season starts, right?
Exactly.
The results. But, I mean, it seems like people have really embraced you. And is that accurate?
It is. It's been amazing, actually, the outpour that we've gotten. You know, from the meet and greet, the first, this is 2 weeks after I've been hired, or maybe 3 weeks. Down at the Wild Hair. It was one of those things that, you know, I was expecting maybe 15 people. And we had over 60. And it was just like, okay, this is what made this job attractive to me was the fact that this is a community.
And the Wild Hair, you know, you talked about that community feel, but they've been a long time booster, long time supporter of, they've got like a stuffed cougar in there.
Joan was one of the first people to reach out to me. It was so funny. It was within hours of me being announced as the head coach that, I mean, I was getting emails from people saying, you know, we want to be back involved in the program. We've been away for a little while, but now we want to, you know, anyway, how can we help you and stuff? And that's really good for a coach to hear.
Joan Monin, owner of the Wild Hair, may or may not be a big reason why I'm here talking to you. She sort of said, you need to talk to him. I was like, oh, maybe we'll wait until closer to football season. And she's like, you could do it now and
anytime you want to talk. I'm always an open book. Like I said, it'll be a lot easier next year when I'm in Canby full-time.
A little bit easier to get here and talk to you.
But she's been great. You know, she's going to help. We're going to help out with the golf tournament this year. Something that, you know, just to even have that as an opportunity is something that, you know, one of the fears that I have is fundraising in a community that I don't know. Because you don't know who the business
owners
are.
And you want to do that to open it up to more kids to participate?
We want kids to participate. We also have, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do is we're trying to move the program a little bit more into the, not to say that they're not in the 21st century, but there's a lot of things that we do need in the program. So fundraising is always, and that's just football in general. That's not just, that's not a Canby thing. That's a football thing. That, you know, we want to make we want football to be an enjoyable experience for high school athletes. We want them to have the best possible experience they can. They want, you know, high school football is something that is very unique. And for most of them, we want them to say that this is the best experience I had in high school.
Their highlight.
This is it. This is the launching pad into the next great experience of my life. The life lessons I've learned through football, the mentorship that I got from my coaches has now led me down to be the best, you know, husband, father, businessman, lawyer.
I love that, man. That it's not just about the win-loss or whatever, you know. People get so fixated on that, but that you really have a larger view here. That's cool.
At the end of the day, you know, there's going to be one team that's going to win the last game of the season. And then there's going to be a ton that are going to have lost. And it's not really about that. It's about enjoying the process from the time you first put on a helmet, whether that's in third grade, eighth grade, or your junior year in high school. It's about making the best possible experience and getting what you get out of it. And, you know, I was talking to some old members of the community who've been around Canby football for one gentleman had been around for 40 years.
Yeah, we're going to say 40
and
years.
And he said that, you know, the thing about it is he's gone through multiple tours and different conflicts that we've been involved with. And he says, you know, the thing that gets me through are the lessons, not that I learned in basic training. It was all those lessons that I learned on the football field.
No way.
From my coaches. And I've heard that over and over again. And,
wow.
And it's like, because it is, it's a valuable, it's a powerful experience. And I think, you know, the more kids we get to experience that, the better we're going to be. And one of the things we want them to do is we want them to have the best possible equipment. We want them to have the best possible experience. One of the things we're going to do is we're going to paint the helmets. You know, it seems very trivial, right? You know, painting helmets. But you know what? It's a fresh coat of paint on a brand new era of Canby football.
Bit of rebranding.
And so to get out there, to have the community support with that kind of stuff, and to know that, you know, I even asked multiple people, what color would you like? And stuff like that. And to have that.
Said the blue that the Cambie Now podcast uses.
Exactly. So that's it. We're going to go with that. Exactly.
Royal blue. Yeah.
But it was just one of those things. Like, and then obviously we want to be able to help out our youth program as well.
Yeah.
Because we need, the one thing that needs to happen in the state of Oregon specifically is that youth football needs to become more affordable. Mm. It's right now, football is one of the most unaffordable sports to play.
Yeah.
A lot of people always look to number situations in youth and say, well, it's the injuries that's causing it.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people look at it and say, well, look how expensive it is to play football.
Right.
Cambie's not the worst by any means. In fact, it's, you know, the one of the things that, another thing attracted me to it was that it has a very strong youth program. Mm-hmm. What's hard to find these days.
Yeah.
But there are some programs in this area that are upwards of $400 to play. Mm-hmm. And luckily Cambie's not one.
Yeah.
But you know, anything we can do to help get our community around to try to lower that, make more kids out there to be able to enjoy the sport is beneficial. And we need people like Joan, and we need people like that to, you know, open doors for us. Not necessarily financially, but we just need them to open doors so we can spread our message.
Sure. You've done some cool outreaches already, even to mm-hmm. the youth. One thing that really caught my eye that I thought was so creative and unique. Maybe it's not unique. Maybe I'm just out of touch. But the signing day you did at Cambie Middle School and I believe 91 School as well for eighth graders.
I missed the 91 school. Oh, okay. I couldn't get there that day, but I did go to the Baker Prairie one. Yeah. Me and Coach Souls, who's the head freshman coach.
Yeah.
We both headed out there. That was something that I've always kind of wanted to do. Other programs in the area do it similar thing. I think that's kind of something that's kind of taken over.
Yeah.
But it's, my whole thing is, if it doesn't matter if it's eighth grade football, freshman football, JV football, varsity football, the big time is where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think of it that like, oh, I'm doing this and, you know, like, oh, I'm just a freshman. Doesn't matter. No. You're just as important as everyone else. This is the biggest thing that you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Any way we can do to make them feel more excited and stuff like that. And we want them to know that we value them and we want them to be a part of this. And to have them go in there, I think it was kind of interesting. We had to figure out like how to do it, you know, and try to explain to the kids. You know, some of the kids, obviously they see high school kids signing on National Signing Day and they knew they were all about it.
Right.
Other kids were like, what am I signing?
Right.
They're
like,
Leary. But it was just one of those things. And it was something we kind of had to throw together. I had just been announced a week earlier.
Yeah. It was really soon after you'd been announced.
Really
yeah.
quick. And it was just like, okay, how do we do this? I got a hold of my graphic artist and I was like, okay, put something together for me.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, what do you want? I'm like, I don't know, but make it look cool.
Yeah.
And, cool. You know, he was able to get it to me and we were able to get it done and we were pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we're almost out of time here. I've loved just, you know, hearing kind of about your philosophy and how you approach football. And we're going to talk much more about this next topic once we get closer to the season. But let's take just a couple minutes, if we could, and kind of talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts. So you're coming from Beaverton as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Offense is definitely, you know, one of the areas that Cambie needed some help. I guess because we are gluttons for punishment, we ran the numbers on last season. In 9 games, we scored 62 points.
Yeah.
I mean, we need some real help on the offensive end. Can you take a few minutes and kind of talk through just at this point before you really see the kids on the field and get kind of what your initial thoughts are about how to make that better?
We're really early on in a lot of that. You know, it's kind of funny. Like, the day I got the job, it was all about, like you said, outreach, social media. It's about all the stuff that you don't really think about too much. It's, you know, like I said, contacting a graphic artist and stuff like that. It's this stuff. So X's and O's sometimes gets pushed down.
Yeah. At this stage.
Yeah. And, you know, especially, and then, you know, you have to hire a staff and you wanted to make sure you got guys that you can trust and you want to be around for 4 months out of the year. What's also something
for many hours a day.
There's some of those days, I hate to say it, but some of those those guys you see more than your wives or children. And you want to be able to sit in the same room with them. It's not always easy.
Yeah. All the stuff they don't teach you in coach school.
Exactly. So it was something that, you know, a lot of X's and O's kind of got pushed down.
Yeah.
The one thing that I look, you know, then it was, you know, just diving into game film and watching film and seeing.
You were watching film like when we started this.
It's been something that, you know, when I have a free minute, it's been like, okay, what can we look at? How can we look at this? And, you know, the thing is, you know, coming from Scambi's ran the wing tee for as long as I can remember.
And what is that?
The wing tee is a system offense that you plug players into, and it's a it's something that's very popular in high schools around the country. The best way you can describe it, I think, for people that are not familiar with it or who might be more familiar with college football, it's what Navy and Army run.
Okay.
So it's something that's like option based. It's it's a
very traditional.
Very traditional. It's something that is very beneficial for programs that might be undersized, but at the same time, it's kind of, you have to really buy into it. It's something that you have to almost treat a, I hate to say, almost as a religion. If wing tee coaches are wing tee coaches, they don't, you know, they don't adapt very well.
Okay, interesting.
And that was, and you know, I remember running, you know, Coach Doty for years. That wing tee was one of the hardest things to stop because there's a lot of misdirection in it and everything like that. Looking at film, you know, we realized that, well, slowly, Camby has kind of been evolving away from the wing tee into trying to find some hybrid stuff. And I think one of the things that I can say right now is, you know, we have to we have to commit ourselves to one thing or the other. And I'm not a wing tee guy. I think wing tee coaches are great. I think Coach Fott did a great job with it. Coach Doty did a great job with it. I've never ran the wing tee. I don't necessarily like running the wing tee. So one of the things I wanted to do is, you know, coming from Beaverton, where we've been, you know, in my 7 years as the offensive coordinator here, we've been one or two in the state in passing, six times. But in that other 1 year, we were also one of the top five rushing teams in the state, too. I don't really believe in trying to, you know, stick a square peg in a round hole. If it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And I don't like to waste my time with just doing stuff because this is what we do. You know, I hate coaches that say that. Well, you know, maybe we should throw the ball more. Well, we don't throw the ball more.
Well, we can't because we're not going to.
Yeah, we're not going to. So one of the things that we, you know, I've told people is we're going to be adaptive. I'm a traditional spread guy, a lot of three and four wide receiver sets, quarterback based. And, you know, but we have to see what we have first. We have to get out on the field. Obviously, from where I'm coming from at Beaverton to where I'm going to now at Canby, there's going to be a big learning curve because it's 7 years of experience right here. It's kind of going back to when I first took over at Beaverton. And so if we can grow as fast as we did here at Beaverton, we'll be just fine because we went from a one-win team that only scored 102 points the year before I got here to, you know, state quarterfinals within 3 years. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Because we had some unbelievable talent come through, too. But, you know, one of the things was we were consistently always going to be one of the top offensive teams in the state.
Any plans for this summer as we run up to?
We do have a camp coming up. We'll have equipment handout on June 12th at Beaver, at Canby High School. And we'll have registration that day, too. If you need a form, obviously go into the high school. They have them there. I just sent, emailed over some more today. There's also, an, throughout the summer, every Wednesday night, we will have our team practices, non-padded practices. Not mandatory, but highly encouraged.
Where are those going to be?
Be at Canby, in the, on the grass field. That's the other thing. We normally
getting
would have...
Getting the field replaced.
Getting the field replaced, and normally we'd have a spring camp. But three of my coaches are coming from Beaverton. So it would be very hard for us to get there, and with no turf and you can't turn the lights on, we decided that we're going to go wait till after school, get through that. Get some daylight hours, get some more time, get the summer weights program started, and go from there.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks so much, Coach
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I really appreciate talking to you, and good luck with all your work this summer, and we'll follow back up before the season starts.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks.
Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Canby that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Canby to learn more about the future of TV. Welcome back, listeners. We're checking in with the City of Canby's Economic Development and Tourism Coordinator, Calvin Lesser.
Hey, Frankie.
I finally got it right for the first time ever. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. We got First Thursday coming up this week. Tell us about it.
Yes, sir. We're definitely gaining momentum, and there's a lot of businesses participating.
What's the theme?
The theme for June is Can Be Healthy.
Mm.
So sort of a fitness, wellness theme.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's weather's turning, it's getting warmer, it's becoming possible and actually fun to be outside and not just watch sports on TV. So it's
indeed.
Yeah, that ties in well.
So in that, in the spirit of that, we've got Waite Park reserved.
Oh, cool.
And at 5 and 6 p.m., the line dancers from the Canby Adult Center should be in the gazebo
doing their thing.
So if you want to come check them out, that'll be great.
What is line dancing? Is that like square dancing?
Well, I want to leave a little incentive for people to come out.
A little mystery. Also, you don't know. So
right. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Furthermore, I don't know.
Cool. Okay, but line dancing in the Waite Park gazebo. That actually does sound really fun.
Yeah. They might be in the gazebo or right up front. We'll see how the weather is.
Okay. Cool.
And then also Canby CrossFit will be coming down to Waite Park to do community fitness classes for free. So check with them on the exact details, but I believe at 5:30 and 6:30 they'll be doing fitness classes. One's for adults, one's for kids.
I was gonna say they do a lot of stuff with kids, so that they'll probably be doing, you know, family stuff for all ages.
Mm-hmm.
They will be. So
Cool.
And they do crazy CrossFit's like insane stuff. Like they're like throwing barrels or like jumping off of tires.
They'll be actually bringing down some equipment and you can find out what it's all about.
Cool.
In the open air.
Yeah. Awesome. Sound like fun.
Yeah. Also, and this is a wonderful new participant in First Thursday, the Canby Pioneer Chapel Performing Arts.
Mm-hmm.
So they are downtown. They're just on 3rd Ave. I guess a little south of what you might consider, just south
like
of Waite Park.
West.
Sorry, we're all crooked here in Canby. But Canby, it's a beautiful space, historic building.
Yeah.
It's great inside. And then this will be cool because you can stop in there and get some free, healthy appetizers and drinks.
They do make you do, what, 40 push-ups before you can come in?
Like I think that would be good form.
Yeah.
You know, just to
drop and give me 40.
To earn it.
Right.
Yeah. And then there will be music going on. So they've got a harpist and a pianist who will be they're billing it as music therapy.
Oh, cool.
So even if you don't do your 40 push-ups on the way in, you will get some wellness out of the sounds. And nice. It really is cool in there to hear.
So workout for your ears.
Well, I think more of a massage for your ears.
Okay,
perhaps.
Fair enough.
The Book Nook is participating, and they've invited...
Workout for your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is. Book Nook will be providing workout for your brain.
I'm really into the fitness,
you
know, at least in this interview.
But they've also invited Aaron from Balance and Harmony to do some breathing exercises.
Across the street from where they used to be, not anymore.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, back... Book Nook in its new location across the street from the Backstop, not far from their old location, just down the hall. Cuts Forest Market, as always, doing First Thursday happy hour with the jazz duo of Rebecca and Ray Hardiman. Grocery shopping as well available at Cuts Forest, as always. Vanessa Zimmerman at Academy Mortgage is going to be doing her thing in the Bell Building on Northwest First Ave with FOB Tap Room down there. They've got prizes and games and snacks. Bingo at the Legion. not to be missed, which is family friendly, by the way. A lot of people are excited to find that out. Retro revival fitness for,
because you got to do the stamp, it's kind of a fitness. Retro revival fitness for your wallet.
That's right.
I'm running out of things.
It is, because it's 10% off store wide.
There you go.
Keep your wallet fat. I don't know if that works.
It does. The metaphor breaks down.
And they're also doing their jewelry making workshop, so you could work out your fingers or your ears, make really heavy earrings. And then they've invited Snap Fitness. Snap Fitness wanted to get involved, so they'll be just outside giving out their information. They have some awesome sort of summer promotions going on at Snap Fitness, so they'll be promoting themselves just outside of Retro. Red Door Antiques and Resale, they also do 10% off store-wide each and every first Thursday. And then Gwyn's Coffee House, we're just going to have to wait and see. They might throw us a curveball, but I don't know what you could, how we could turn that into a health, and do you have any ideas? Like a workout for your...
Workout, well... If you get like a really large coffee, maybe it's kind of a workout for your for your arm, or at least whenever I'm at Gwyn's, it's a workout for my mouth, because it's just talking.
Yeah, so. You see everyone you know there and you start chatting.
Yeah, the entire town of Canby in Gwyn's Coffee House. So cool. Well, it was, I mean, it seems like forever, but it was only 6 months ago where we were all making New Year's resolutions and vowing to be healthier, and you know, now completely forgotten. But here's a chance to dust off those resolutions and have a little fun as well, and see some ways that we can improve our health right here in Canby. So
absolutely,
awesome. Well, thanks so much for telling us about it.
Yeah, thank you, Frankie.
Cool. All right, see you guys on Thursday.
Are you a small business owner, or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome. Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week, and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Jimmy Joyce and Calvin LeSueur. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next episode, we'll take you back to a time of sword fights and gallantry, jousting and high adventure. No, it's not a review of Game of Thrones final season. It's the Oregon Renaissance Fair. It returns to the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby this weekend, bringing us the sights, sounds, and yes, even the smells of medieval era Scotland. We'll give you a sneak peek of, well, the sounds anyway, next time on the Canby Now podcast.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or learn how to support us and our show. You can gain access to exclusive content and all kinds of super cool things through Patreon. Visit canbynowpod.com/plus.